Hello, everyone, and welcome to the One Board Family Podcast. I am Rick White, and here with me, as always, is a man who is living the Mrs. Doubtfire lifestyle this week. Ryan Gutowski, how are you?
That's right, man. I'm making pies and dressing up like a lady. No, I'm not. I'm not doing any of those things. I do want a pie now, though.
Yeah.
So is that...
I think, you know, we always keep referencing, you know, in our Will It Game podcast, we keep referencing, like, older things. Why can't there be a Mrs. Doubtfire game? I mean, I don't know how that's going to go over well, but darn it, I'd love the nostalgia.
Oh, yeah. If they can do a Jumanji, why can't they do a Mrs. Doubtfire? Come on.
Right. Let's just do a Robin Williams-themed set of games. We'll do Bicentennial Man... and Jack
Adams.
Yeah.
Depressing.
Yeah, a lot of his movies are kind of sad when you really think about it. Don't think about it too hard.
Yeah, don't think about those Robin Williams joints too hard. It might crush your soul.
Yep. Ryan, how goes it, sir?
It goes well, man. I'm playing Mr. Mom this week, taking care of all the chirins and still trying to fit in a little bit of game time from time to time this week. And so, yeah, doing well, though. Like, it's going to be a good week. I think tomorrow we're a little late recording the podcast because it's been a little hectic. But hopefully tomorrow I'm going to be sitting down with the kids after dinner and just playing a game with them and just hanging out with them. So I think it'll be a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I hope you're not sitting in the corner like some kind of, like, you know, I need a game, man. Like, somebody play a game with me. Please, come on, man. Like, I hope you're not wandering the streets of Columbus seeking people to play games with you.
You know how it is. Now, actually, we had some good game time this weekend, and that kind of gets us into what we've been playing. This weekend, Aaron and I and Kendall actually played Tiny Epic Zombies. This was a Kickstarter, Tiny Epic, the Tiny Epic series. I was a big fan of Tiny Epic Quest, which is a game that we actually reviewed on the website a while back. And Tiny Epic Zombies is, if you think back to Dawn of the Dead, set in a mall, the zombie hordes in the mall, that's the setting of Tiny Epic Zombies. It's a lot of fun. It has those same item meeples. If you look up item meeples, they're really cool. They're little meeples, little plastic meeples that can hold different items.
They are pretty cool.
They're really neat. I like Tiny Epic Zombies. I can't say that I liked it more than Tiny Epic Quest. There are 5 different game modes in Zombies, and we only played one of them. So I feel like I really have to, it's going to be a while till I get time to review this one, probably closer to Halloween, because there are so many game modes that I want to give it a fair shake.
Was that a similar thing in Tiny Epic Quest where there was different game modes?
Not that I remember. I know there's a solo mode, but I think for the most part there was just the everybody against everybody else. But this one, you've actually got one versus everybody else at the table. You've got a cooperative mode where everybody's working together. Then you have a competitive mode. You have a cooperative against another player. And then you have a solo mode. So there's, I don't know. And they feel, from what I read of the directions, I feel like they're going to feel very different. We played competitive mode, and it didn't seem hard. There were some times when the zombies got out of control, and so it didn't seem too difficult, and I want to see what the other modes look like, because if it ramps up the difficulty, I think I'll like it a little more.
Awesome. So how does a competitive mode work in a zombie game? Because, I mean, when I think zombies, I'm like, we got to do this together so we don't all die, guys.
So the way it works is actually there are 3 objectives that get put out onto the table. And you have the objectives have 2 different sides. So if you're playing competitive or cooperative, they have 2 different ways that they play out. The competitive mode, the first one to accomplish all 3 objectives actually wins the game. They're called the team leader, essentially. And so I actually end up completing all 3 objectives. Kendall completed 1 and Aaron completed 2. So I end up getting 2 at first.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're in charge now is the way that works.
I'm the leader until somebody throws me over.
I think that should be played like right before you play Dead of Winter. You play this game to kind of set up what's going to happen in Dead of Winter.
this is the hour long pregame to the 3 hour yeah. long Dead of Winter.
Yeah.
I miss playing that game so much. Somebody told me that they played this weekend and I got super jealous.
As you should be.
Yeah. So,
well, Ryan, this season has been kind of disappointing from the Rick perspective of games that he's been playing, but I'm on the train now. If there's nice. A train, I don't know
there's
where the train
trains.
Is. Yeah, I love trains. I don't really like. I'm fairly indifferent towards trains. but I did get some gaming in, and so much so that it's hard to narrow down what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
But I do want to hit a new Bob Ross game that we got from Big G Creative. Nice. Over in the White House, and this is Bob Ross, Happy Little Accidents. Now, no, this is not about, like, a baby that goes around and leaves unfortunate messes throughout your house, though that does sound like a good Will It Game episode. Instead, this game is really basic, and it's so basic it's going to, I think, end up being hard for me to do like official review for it. But you have pieces of paper, everybody gets three, and just draws a random squiggle or design on it. Nothing complicated, because what's going to happen is you take all those, put them face down in the center of the table, and then you draw one randomly, and then the game master reads... asks another player to pick a number 1 through 6 that corresponds to a place on a card that they have, and that will say a word like outdoors or underground or different adjectives or nouns, and then your job is in 30 seconds to use the squiggle that's on the piece of paper you've got to make something that fits that category. So my father-in-law had just like what looked kind of like an S, and then when he got underground, he turned it into a snake. And I had one that Sarah didn't quite understand the rules, so she wrote the word love for underground in like cursive. So I turned it into like graffiti that was painted on like a
That's
sewer
funny.
Wall for that. And so you do that, and then at the end of 3 rounds, everybody puts out their own favorite drawing, the one that they think is the best. And then you vote using these little tokens on, like, we were playing 4 people, so 3 points, 2 points, 1 point. The points for anybody that loves Bob Ross are represented by squirrels, because Bob Ross had a pet squirrel that he always brought on camera that was adorable.
That's awesome.
So you give a certain number of squirrels, and whoever has the most squirrels wins.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
I like it.
It plays in, like, less than 10 minutes.
How many people does this play?
It could play up to 5, but you as long as you get more markers, I think you're fine. Oh, no, sorry, up to 6.
Okay.
It's
yeah,
really
I was about to say it sounds like a party game to me, and it sounds like something that I know our family would really dig.
Yeah, I mean, there are elements to it where, and this kind of we've talked about this with some other games where you feel like you could totally play this without. The game box, because the cards with the suggestions are kind of what makes the game. I mean, even the game box itself, it's the one frustrating aspect was you have to draw all the squiggles in a black marker so that people can see what you drew with your, everybody else gets assigned a color so that you can see what did you add to the original squiggle. So
yeah,
it stands
gotcha.
Out, but there's only one black marker in the entire box. So you're sitting there waiting on everybody to one at a time draw their squiggles as it goes around the table.
So the setup takes a little longer in the as you start the game.
Right. Gotcha. And it's tiny little mark. Like there's just part of me that's like, you guys could have given us more markers. Like markers aren't
yeah.
expensive.
Yeah.
And so that's the part where you kind of wonder, could I do this on my own? But having the Bob Ross stuff in there, I think definitely adds to, I love that theme of Bob Ross. I kind of love it ironically, and it's starting to become serious. But I think that's a really cool addition that they've made to it. So it's a good game, and one that's it's kind of like what was the game that we talked? It's kind of like Blank Slate that we talked about last week, where
yep.
it's a nice little addition. I think it could fit that same that same realm of quick, simple, everybody will pick up on it, and, you know, 10 minutes and you're good.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other game that we got out with my in-laws this weekend was Parfum, it's basically perfume in French, I think.
I was about to say, I was like, that's an odd name game.
Yes. But basically, this is a game that has you creating perfumes and selling them to customers to get the most points. Now, Parfum has been on my radar a really long time because it is a game that is really, really cheap on Amazon. Right now, I looked it up today, and it's less than $10. But when you get the box, like, this is a board game. Like,
really?
There were six sheets of, like, materials that I had to punch out. There's a lot of tokens, a lot of different pieces of cardboard. I have no idea how Queen Games is making money on this because it is so cheap and it is a substantial board game.
Interesting.
But basically, it's kind of a set collection. I don't know what mechanics I would say it is, but you kind of bid or get turn order based on like who's losing gets to pick their turn order first. And the earlier you go, the fewer actions you get to take, which part of your actions are rolling dice to try to get ingredients for certain parts of a perfume. They're supposed to be the different notes. And then later, after that round, after everyone's done that, you're trying to sell to customers that want particular types of perfume. So you're trying to make sure that you're able to meet the needs of your customers, but also, you know, able to make several different bottles of perfume that you can sell. It took a little while for people to get used to the rules, but once we started about halfway through the game, everybody was good to go. I'd say the game took us about an hour and a half to play the first time, and that would be cut in half the second time we played. It's a good game. It's not going to blow you away. I think, though, like the fact that it costs $10 almost makes me say that you really need to buy this simply because it is such a bargain. And I don't know. It's really hard for me to say not to get this when it's so cheap.
Yeah. Well, that's a way that you can boost your game collection without really breaking the bank. You know, that's I sold a couple games this week. Finally getting to that point where I can sell some games, you know, and really let them go. But that's really cool because, you know, if you're looking for a good solid game to add to the game shelf, something that's a little different than what you've got, that's one that you can pick up. Awesome. Thanks. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, dude.
Definitely. And you know, you and I, we don't have any problems getting games added to our shelves. I actually counted. We did some redecorating in our board game room that I finally have shelf space. But I counted like 37 games that I haven't played that are in my collection. There's no need for me to add more. But if you're just starting it up and you're looking for something that's substantial to add, because, you know, we did a couple of episodes ago, we did Bang for Your Buck games, and many of those were, you know, had many different variations and stuff, but they did have some, most of them were fairly simple. This is like a hearty game that's going to be good and cheap for you.
So check that one out, Parfum, that's Parfum.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, we're going to be talking about some game night flops. What's going to happen when you game night flops, Rick? Let's talk about that in the next segment. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
Right, welcome back. So Ryan, this week is kind of inspired from recent events, but what we're going to be talking about are game night flops. You know, you've gotten the snacks set out, you've chosen the board games for the evening, you got some people coming over, maybe they're kind of new to board games, and you want to make sure you leave a good impression, and the game just does not go over well. Ryan, you know, you and I host a lot of board game nights. Do you have some board game night flops that stick out in your mind?
My biggest board game night flop is actually with my favorite game. I sat down to play Dead of Winter. It was probably about a year and a half ago. Sat down to play Dead of Winter and sitting down with a friend who didn't have very much time at the time to play games. And so he had committed that night to come over. I invited another friend over who was interested in playing the game, invited somebody else over who hadn't played before, but he was interested. And it was just kind of like one of those, he was just wanting to spend time with us. So great, let's go. So, everybody, two of the three guys arrive and we sit down and I've got the board game set up and we're waiting. And then I finally say, "Hey, Emily, I need you to jump in." And then when the fourth person arrives, I need you to jump back out, but play the first couple of hands of Dead of Winter. And because some of the people at the table weren't really familiar with some of the mechanics, I thought it would be easier if I just take out all the traitor cards, you know? Mm-hmm. So, instead of there being a possibility of a possible traitor and kind of destroying the game, I was like, let's just play this cooperatively, just purely as a co-op game. Let's just play and have a good night. And so I take out all of the traitor cards. So, third guy shows up and he shows up 35 minutes late. I have to re-explain all the rules of the game. He doesn't understand them. We continue to play. And then we realize that somebody is intentionally destroying the community. And I look around and I said, well, and I made it as clear as possible. Well, I've taken out all the traitor cards. So there's no possible way that anybody's a traitor. So I'm just going to go through the rules one more time. And that's it. I go through the rules one more time. Two rounds later, we all die. And one guy turns over their card and says, "Ha ha, got you guys. I was the traitor."
Wait, so had you not taken it out or was he just lying?
No, I missed one card in the whole deck. And he got it.
Oh my gosh.
It was 3 hours of just brutal torture.
Oh.
And I walked my friend to his car. It was almost midnight. I said, "Dude, I'm so sorry. I am so, so sorry," because he didn't have very much time to play. Like, so he had carved out this time to sit down and play a game that he didn't have time for. And I walked him to his car and I said, "I'm so sorry, dude." And he was like, "That's fine, man. It's all good. You did what you could. It's all good." And he left and I went to bed just so upset, dude.
And I've never seen him again.
It's the worst game experience I've ever had.
So. Oh man. Yeah. And we're going to get into some do's and don'ts here for game flops in a minute, but and some of those we can pull from that. But I think my worst game night flop, our ladies and gentlemen experience was pretty bad.
That was pretty bad.
But I think actually today was pretty bad. Today, as part of our problem-solving unit for Algebra 2, we played Unlock, and so I had two tables of students running Unlock, and it went okay for some of the students, but, like, I was trying to get through the tutorial, and, you know, after now, it felt like my students got it faster last time, but, you know, I think it's kind of how time kind of fuzzies your memory a little bit. So when I had them go through the tutorial, it went really quickly and they weren't picking up on it immediately. And I was like, "Come on, guys, like, what's taking us so long? We need to pick up on this." And so when they started the game last year, I did my very best to not say anything. But this year it was just brutally slow. Unlock, you know, is a game that has, it's like an escape room for people that haven't heard about it, and it's played in a deck of cards. Well, sometimes on the cards there are hidden numbers and letters. They never noticed any of those. Even on the tutorial card, like, they were struggling with it. And then just like putting stuff together, they were like, I remember there was one part where they were like, here's a wire. It goes with this phone. I was like, it doesn't go with a phone. Yes, it does. Phones need wires. And so they kept like getting it wrong and pressing like the penalty button. And they're like, I don't see why this is wrong. Like, because it is, like, move on, stop it. But one group finished and the other group got it right with 1 second left. And I think the other part of it was that, like half of each group was kind of engaged and the other half was kind of like, whatever. Part of that was due to like some dominant people. And part of it was due to some people just not caring at all. So the whole time I was like sitting there trying to like make those that weren't involved get involved and trying to, you know, pep it up a little bit with some excitement. But it just did not work nearly as well as it did last year, trying to play those unlock games. So I'll probably need to play it with another group just to make me feel better and see, like, you know, it went well and then it didn't. Like, what's the real answer here? But that did not go all that well for me today. And so, like, when they were leaving, I was like, it's fun, I promise.
It's so hard when you like a game, and I've had that same experience. Not the same experience, but I've had a similar experience with Unlock because Erin is not a puzzle. She doesn't like puzzle stuff. She doesn't like that sort of game. And I remember trying so hard to make her like Unlock because I really enjoy it. In fact, she was out of town. I think maybe she had to go to a wedding. Yeah, she had to go to a wedding. And I invited two friends over, and we played Unlock, just the four of us. So the four of us played Unlock. I was like, well, Erin hates this game. We're going to end up playing it. So, and it was actually a miserable experience because that, even though it was a two-star box, it was difficult. Like, we struggled through the whole middle of that game to the point where we were like 104 minutes in and we were just like, this is excruciating.
This isn't going
We finally
well.
Got out. It finally got out, but we felt like real big idiots.
Well,
what are some do's and don'ts, Rick?
Well, I think we could start with some do's. Okay. I put on here, prepare ahead of time for the type of game for your audience. So, you know, like you said, if your audience doesn't like deduction games, you know, you're not forcing this on them. You are trying to, you're trying to meet whatever situation they're in. So if they're hardcore gamers, let's play a harder game, something a little more hefty. Don't try to do something simple because they're probably not going to enjoy it. If they're new gamers, let's, you know, read them. If they're hesitant in what you're doing, play a lighter game. If they're really gung-ho about it, start with something light and then kind of see how the night goes into something heavier.
Definitely don't try to say, well, I know they don't like deduction games, but they're really going to love this version of Werewolf.
Right.
Don't do that because you're going to set it up for failure. And then they're going to be like, I clearly told this person that I didn't like this style game. I think another thing for the do's list is focus less on yourself winning or trying to be crowned champ that night and focus more on the experience of others. Be a little selfless, especially if you're hosting the game night or if you're teaching the game. One thing that I love about Bob, who is also one of the writers here on One Board Family, Bob does such a great job of teaching the game, so much so that he sacrifices even the thought of winning because he teaches and he wants the experience to be good for others. And that's something that you can do when you're hosting a game night. That's very important. Like, the experience that everybody has at the table should be so much greater than you having a win at the end of the night.
Yeah, I don't win all that often.
Yeah.
And part of it's because I tell people I use 60% of my brain to try to make sure other people know what they're doing. Like, I'm essentially, if it's a four player game, I'm playing four players because if I'm usually teaching the game. And so I'm having to think through other people's turns. And so if only 40% of my brain is going towards actual strategy and stuff, because I'm resetting all the time, I'm probably not going to play all that well. That's, you know, if I'm not hosting the game night, I'm all in. Like, I'm fine with, you know, I'll of course help with rules and stuff, but I put that responsibility on the game night host, and I, you know, focus on my game and I have a good time. But that, if I'm in charge, I want to make sure that people are having fun. That's the number one priority, and not ending up in the winner's circle.
That's right.
And I put also under the dues, a big one that I was guilty of this weekend. You need to, maybe double is too much, but you need to increase the gameplay time for your first time through a game.
Yeah.
That your Dead of Winter story is perfect. I had a similar situation with Above and Below. We took it over when I borrowed it from you, took it over to Kyle and Chris's house, and 2.5 hours later, I was like, I'm so sorry. They were like, you know, let's keep it kind of short. We got to get ready in the morning, and like it's 10:15. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't expect it to take this long. But you know,
that's what I think, that the more you host game nights, the more you are aware of this. One thing that I've started to realize is when we host a game night and there's two or three games on the table that we're thinking about, okay, we're going to show this person how to play Clank, and we're going to show them this and this. What we usually do is we pare it down to a short filler game and a hour long game, you know, because I think that when you sit there and you're like, well, we're going to be playing Clank, and then we're going to set up Star Wars Imperial Assault and play a 2-hour game of that, and then we'll finish it off with Above and Below. That's not realistic. People are not going to spend 6 hours at your house playing these games, you know, especially on a weeknight. That's insane, you know. Right. So I think as you host game nights more and as you put together these game nights for people, I think you start to realize, oh, well, maybe we start off with Herbaceous and then we play something a little, you know, a little heavier. But if it says an hour on the box, make sure that you plot out an hour and a half for that game, because especially if people are learning, it's going to happen that way.
And keep in mind the players, that if you've got regular players, like Sarah takes her time with her turns.
Yeah.
And keep that in mind. And then my friend Grant, he is like the ultimate planner. And so when I'm playing a game, I know that it's going to greatly increase the amount of time if he's playing with me. And that's not, you know, sometimes with, if it's people that I don't know, that can bother me, but I know that Grant, the experience up with him in that game is totally worth it. I love playing games with him and Shane. But just keep that in mind. We played Photosynthesis with my in-laws this week, and I was like, take an hour and a half maybe. And or I said an hour, and it took us an hour 45, maybe two.
Because you're teaching it and people are plotting, and
it takes some time. And then just a little do that I put in here is just have some music for those players that do kind of take a little bit of time. It's sometimes talking at the table. I'm not saying be silent, but if you try to start having conversations with other players, I notice that sometimes those people who are taking a while on the turns like to involve themselves in the conversation. And it's hard to say, like, stop talking, we're talking because of you. But like, if you just have some music on in the background, it keeps the awkward silence away. And I think it's just like a nice little thing to just set the mood and keep it a little more positive.
That's right. That's cool. Yeah, that's something that, especially like if there's a game night, kind of like a theme going on, if you're sitting there playing Cult Express, play some Western music in the background. Oh, yeah. It'll be fun, you know. Put something on that's thematically sound. So, let's go into the don'ts, Rick. Don't force a game style.
Yeah.
You know, some things just don't click with people, and kind of back onto that, like if you don't like deduction games, don't try to convert somebody because you think you have the best deduction game ever. You know, don't force a game style on somebody. If people don't like rolling dice, don't say, well, this is unlike all the other dice games.
Right.
Just pick something different. You know, sometimes people need to be eased into something that they'll enjoy, you know. So, you know, show them something different. Show them something that they might enjoy, something that they've never played before.
Yeah, and going along with the forcing games, I would say don't try to force another game to try to clear the palate. And what I'm thinking about here is in a game situation where, you know, maybe in this Dead of Winter thing, you might feel guilty, even if they did have more time. and it wasn't midnight, you might want to say like, okay, let's just do this one other game that I know is good. You need to understand that sometimes it's a flop of a game night and it's not going to be saved at that moment. It's going to have to be something that we'll do it again next time. Don't try to like save the game night with some other game, because it could just, especially if you're having to explain rules and all that stuff, it could just make things worse.
Yeah.
And I think with that one goes, I think, Ryan, I don't know if you've ever done this, but I put don't stop in the middle of the game. Have you ever done that with a board game you're playing?
We have. And I think that this rule is I would put this in a maybe rule.
Okay.
Because sometimes games just really aren't working for people. A good example would be we start playing. This was probably 2 years ago. I bust out my 1979 edition of Stop Thief. Erin does not like Stop Thief. She's told me many times, but I've continued to tell her, you'll like it this time.
And you were breaking the rule of don't force it on people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't follow these rules. I just say them. so we busted this out with another couple. We're sitting there playing this game of Stop Thief, and I'm having issues with the crime scanner because it's from 79, and it still has its Duracell battery in it from like 82.
Oh, anyway, my God.
So it still works, but it was starting to glitch out a little, and I was like, oh, man, this is kind of frustrating. But it was clear that there was no engagement in the game, and we were 20 minutes in. I think there are times when it's okay to stop in the middle of the game and say, listen, it's not working. Let's go to a tried and true, something that we all know how to play and just have fun. You know, and I think in that case, this makes sense. But this is more of a video game situation, but we were playing Mario Party with some friends at church a couple years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, playing Mario Party one night. It's super late, and the game had gotten really out of control crazy, and we still had a little while to go. And somebody complained, and the person turned the game off. Like, this was on, and it was like, we just wasted an hour and a half of our lives. And I remember, like, the anger, me and my friend John actually talked about this a couple weeks ago, and it still makes us angry, you know?
Man.
So gauge it with everybody. If you can tell nobody's having fun, you know what, guys, we're 20 minutes in. Let's just quit playing this. Let's put something on the table that we all know that we like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's an okay
reason. I can definitely
reason.
Agree with that, and especially on a longer game. I guess my perspective was like, I think this kind of goes with another one that I put on here, is don't continuously apologize or feel guilty. You know, bad game nights are going to happen. And, you know, if you apologize, it sometimes can make it worse. In that you're pointing out that it's a negative experience. I think your positivity is important for a game night. Just like you're
That's
not
true.
Paying attention to winning the game, you being positive about it, even if it's not going well, even if other players are complaining about it, you can, of course, be observant of things that aren't going well and can agree that's not working. But I think if you can be positive, don't, you know, just, I'm so sorry. Like, guys, I know, obviously apologize if it took longer than it was supposed to and things like that, but like, do it once and move on. Like, I think, you know, most people are going to be all right with it. It is just a board game. And I think just being okay with being positive about things, not being so worried that people aren't enjoying themselves, that you just are like, okay, we'll just quit, guys. It's fine if you want to quit. Like, are you sure you don't want to quit? Like, when you get overbearing with that, you'll make it worse.
That makes sense. So, Rick, we're going to go into our last segment of the show, and we're going to be talking about top 5 game night guarantees from our perspective. Now, these may not be perfect for you, but these are actually 5 games that Rick and I play regularly with our game groups or friends or family members, and these are games that go over really, really well for us, and we get positive feedback every time we bring them to the table. So, we'll go into that segment after this break.
Thank you.
right. We are back. Rick, we've got a couple game night guarantees. These are games that you and I have played with friends, family, game at different game nights, and these go over really well for us. I know one that I added to the list was Downforce. Downforce is a game that every time I bring Downforce to the table, whether it's a new gamer or somebody seasoned, there's so much fun to be had in that game because there's a shift. You know, these cars are racing along and people are playing their cards, and you start to realize somebody's out in front, so you're never going to play a card with their color on it again. And so Downforce gets people talking, gets people competitive, and the good part about Downforce is it doesn't overstay its welcome. 35 minutes and the game is done. It's just the right amount of time where you can play another game if you want to. Downforce is one that we get a lot of positive feedback at every time we do a game night. In fact, one of our game nights recently, about a month ago, we played four tracks of Downforce and had a blast. Just four tracks back to back, and everybody had a really good time.
Yeah, I think that's one where you feel like you feel like it's a heavier game than it really is. Like, it's so quick and painless, but, like, I don't know, when I was playing it, I felt like I was really in a board game. It didn't feel as light as it really is. And it's a good game. I really like that one. So another one on this list we've got is an oldie but a goodie, and that is Sequence. For those of you that might not be familiar with it, you have a board on which there are pictures of the different cards you would find in a deck. There are two of each card, I believe. And then you also have a regular deck of cards that's dealt out to people. And on your turn, you can play a card from your hand out on the table and then take a poker chip and cover up an image of that card on the board. And either by yourself or in teams, you're trying to get four or five in a row. And maybe you'll do that once or twice. It plays really well with a bunch of different setups of numbers of people. This is not one that's going to blow your mind, but it's simple, it's easy to do, and there's just enough take that element to where nobody really gets frustrated. They just kind of are like, oh, shucks, well, I'll move on to something else. So it has a good interactive feel, and I think as basic as it sounds, there have been some exciting moments of this game that I've played it a lot at school, and I think it works really well.
Yeah, I actually played Sequence. We played Sequence twice this weekend. A neighborhood friend of my daughter's came over, and we were looking for a game that just played quickly and was fun and competitive. We played teams. Me and my daughter were on a team, and then her and her friend were on a team. And man, it was just a lot of fun. Everybody was laughing and smack talking and, oh no, I'm going to take your token away. It was a lot of fun. Sequence, I love the team atmosphere that you build when you're playing, especially when you're playing like couples. That's a really fun way to play Sequence, doing teams of two players, three different teams of two. That's probably my favorite way, just because it's so much smack talk, lots of different things going on the board, a lot of fun. So definitely, Sequence is a really good one.
Yes,
what about
sir.
Liar's Dice? Rick, you talk a lot about Liar's Dice. This is a very simple game, something that you can just grab some cups, some plastic cups and some dice and make this one happen. Why is Liar's Dice a game night guarantee for you?
Yeah, I think it's because people aren't intimidated by a cup and dice. And because there is a lot of luck at the beginning of the game, there's some mathematical knowledge required, but it ends up, because it's so much luck-based that the mathematical knowledge can sometimes get in the way, it allows the door to open to a whole bunch of people. And it plays well because everybody feels involved. And there are different variations. The one I play, once somebody gets called out as a liar, everybody votes on whether or not that person is telling the truth. So you have to make a decision about it every single time. So you're always engaged. It does have an element where if you lose, you're out. And that's not my favorite thing in the world, but people usually don't care. And they're intrigued about who's going to win the game, and they kind of stay involved and pay attention to the whole thing. So that's always gone over really well. I've played it with like four different groups of people, And each time I've had people say, like, I had some non-board gaming friends say, hey, when are we going to do that game? What was, had like cups and dice, like, yeah. I don't even remember what it was called. I was like, yeah, we'll play that again sometime. Yeah. And they, that's and cool. they really liked it a lot.
Awesome. And these next two actually are newer games. One is a game that is just hitting the market, and another one's the one that's going to hit the market in October. But they've been really successful each time we've brought them out. Welcome 2 is a flip and write game where you are we're flipping cards out, and you're making choices to put a sign. Everybody's got the sheet of paper that they write on, and everybody's assigning house numbers to these different city blocks as they build out this community. It's such a good, classy looking game. It gets everybody involved. You can play one, the box says 1 to 100. Honestly, I mean, we played 6 people at lunch today, had a great time. I've played this game with 8 or 9 people, and I've played it just with me and Aaron beat my tail real bad. And so Welcome 2 is a really cool game night guarantee that we found every time we've brought it out. With probably 5 minutes of explanation, people get into it and get really pumped.
Yeah, I think Roll and Writes can be a good guarantee where it's not, again, we're not going for the best game that you'll have at game night.
Yeah.
We're going for something that you know is going to go over well. And yep. These generally do a good job of that. There's nothing about like a take that that kind of gets somebody so frustrated they don't want to play anymore. And there's no mm-hmm. rules that cause them to get frustrated because it lasts so long. I think these work pretty well. And the last one that we've got on here is Most Wanted. Most Wanted is kind of a poker-based game. I've played it two or three or four times with different groups of people, and it went really well. And it sounds like you've hit it up a couple times this weekend or past couple weeks.
Yeah, we actually played once this week. We've played a couple weekends in a row, actually. Aaron really digs this game. It's got that, like you said, it's almost poker-like, poker-light. You know, if you know some generic rules of, you know, triples beat doubles and a straight beats, you know, two of a kind, stuff like that. As long as you know the basics, and there's a guide, there's a little like breakdown of like this beats this on the back of the rule book. But the game is really fun and it gets real competitive. People get to duel each other at the table. I would say that there are large swings in the game, but that's okay because it's just such a quick competitive game that Most Wanted is one that you definitely have to check out. We're going to actually be doing a review of that at the end of September because it's releasing from North Star Games in October. So Most Wanted is one that you definitely want to pay attention to.
Yeah, and you know, these are our top 5. If you've got some, yeah. You know, comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/oneboardfamily, and let us know some other games that you think would be great game night guarantees that always go well for your group. And, you know, besides Facebook, we're also on YouTube, youtube.com/oneboardfamily. We've got an Instagram account, a Twitter account. You can keep up with all of our stuff. And, hey, you know what? If you like this content, can we recommend that you become a Patreon supporter? You know, one thing that I think has been really cool that we've added recently is our Slack channel. I didn't know anything about Slack until about a month ago. And now I can't get off of Slack. I just keep wanting to add content. And anytime, you know, I see like a board game deal, I'm trying to throw it out there to people so that they can buy the games when I don't have enough money to do it myself. And then maybe I can borrow it from them later. That's where Ryan and Bob and I and Aaron are throwing out things that we're doing. It's like a more updated version of our Facebook or Instagram feeds. So I personally think, especially with the game deals that we promote, mm-hmm. it's worth your money to support us on Patreon just yeah. to save money on your board game purchases. So I would recommend that our listeners check that out.
Definitely. So thanks so much for listening. If you like the podcast, be sure to rate us on iTunes or your podcast subscription player thing app of choice. However you want to rate us, do whatever. Even if you want to scream out 5 stars, just do that wherever you're at. Even if you're on the bus. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Robert.
Even if you're lying, please give us 5 stars. You know, we're not above you just making us look better. Please do it.
That's true. That's true. All right, that'll do it. Thanks so much for joining us on the One Board Podcast. And until next time, we will see you at the table.
Media.
Where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.